Okay, yeah, so thanks everyone, thanks to everybody at YU for inviting me here. I've known about this work for a few years, and it's really exciting to come and look at it again, and especially now in an American context, where it appears like rather different to me than it did in the European context in London, where I first encountered it. So as a bit of background, like Robert said, I studied painting and then graphic design and then art history. So these are like the competing or complementary lenses through which I view Wex's work. And I'm particularly interested in like social or visual surveys, like Let's Take Back Our Space, that kind of toe the line between the sciences and the arts, and especially those that deploy like accumulative and like sociological means in an attempt to like achieve radical transformative ends. So like methodologically in this talk, I'm following the idea that Let's Take Back Our Space is amenable to many possible readings, for instance, that it could be like an encyclopedia of gesture or a sociological treatise on photography and editing, among other things. I think these frameworks are interesting and relevant and like deserving of further elaboration, so I'll be following some of these lines of inquiry and also attending to, for instance, the specific historical character of her work. So that is, I'll also try to offer examples of other works that I see Let's Take Back Our Space potentially relating to. In the first part of the talk, I'll look at the social and political context of the project, namely post-war West Germany, as well as at a milieu of local and international feminist practices. In the second part, I'll briefly look at how the work relates in perhaps an unself-conscious sense to a history of photo documentary in post-war Germany as well as abroad, and then specifically the relation between Let's Take Back Our Space and developments in sociology. So part of this means looking at Let's Take Back Our Space and its book form as a kind of pseudo-sociological study. So like kind of contrary to the announcement of this talk, I'm not really speaking at all to the panels version of the work, which are on display upstairs. So that said, although I think these like previous points are important for establishing the grounds for looking at her work, these points are also, let's say, subordinate to my primary objective in talking about Let's Take Back Our Space. So rather, I raise them in order to draw attention to a decisive element, which is the role that painting plays in Wex's project. So from this angle, at the end, I'll look at how painting and Wex's work operates in relation to those other categories of frameworks I mentioned, you know, how painting kind of manipulates them and is in turn inflected through them. And so as a final aside, I'll just say that like this research is kind of part of a larger project, and so it's still in the beginning phases, and my notes are maybe a little more schematic than critical. So I'll just start. Marianna Wex's work, Let's Take Back Our Space, Female and Male Body Language as a Result of Patriarchal Structures, developed between 1972 and roughly 1979, poses challenges to interpretation on material, social, and political fronts. It's comprised of over 300 panels, upon which are arranged texts and captions, in combination with more than 5,000 photographs she took of men, women, and children on the streets of Hamburg, as well as reproductions of advertisements, art, and personal photographs. The entire collection is maintained at the Bildwäsche, a feminist archive in Wex's native Hamburg. For a non-German, her findings have more or less been accessible in their original configuration, and instead they've circulated in a reduced and altered form as a 366-page landscape format softcover book. The book is organized into roughly three schematic thematic sections, the first of which focuses on contemporary images of men and women arranged by posture. The second section focuses on art from ancient Egypt to the 19th century and on art history, and the last part of the book concerns Wex's own socialization. With the full PDF scan of Let's Take Back Our Space currently archived on YU's website conceals is just how like large and unwieldy the book is. Upon acquiring my copy some years ago, I quickly found that it would overspill my lap when I would try to look at it, forcing me to adopt a kind of like cross-legged pose to keep its otherwise floppy pages flat. So that is, as a document about how men and women unconsciously occupy space, its polemic seems to take effect upon first encounter in the exasperating way it reminds one of one's physical boundaries. I'm not sure if Wex like intended for a user to have this experience, but I like to imagine that she did, and it's a feature of the book that's on like so many occasions put me off from even opening it. This project, as a like photographic and textual exploration of the unself-conscious or sometimes very conscious bodily gestures that men and women make and their social implications, invites several questions, at least for the art historian, most basically, you know, where did the impulse come from that drove this unusual production, and to what, you know, social or political impetus might we ascribe Wex's interests? As the website and information about the show says, Wex was born in Hamburg in 1937. She studied and eventually taught there at the University of Fine Arts. In the book's third section, Wex explains that she undertook this project because, quote, "I know now that I had unconsciously viewed everything exclusively from the standpoint of male values and recognition. All those ideas, interests, and needs that had the most to do with myself, I had obviously completely repressed under the pressure of my environment." So what were the specific political and economic features of this environment that would warrant such an investigation? When Wex began working in the early 1960s, West Germany was winding down what was then called its economic miracle period, begun under the stewardship of Ludwig Erhard, a conservative economist who in 1948 helped to reform Germany's economy, instituting shifts to the tax code and currency, which led to outcomes like increased industrial production, new factory policies, and modifications to the workforce. As finance minister to Konrad Adenauer's government and then chancellor between 1963 and 66, Erhard helped to ensure that West Germany adopted security and prosperity as the new order of business, the neoliberal idea, you know, of the basic democratic right for consumer freedom. By 1954, when Wex was 17, people in West Germany who had experienced war and then deprivation during the post-war reparation period immediately encountered, within the space of a few short years, a dramatic shift to American-style democratic capitalist normalcy. So this is one of the images Wex includes of herself at the back of her book in a section where she's describing her own formation, and she's like self-critical of her youthful unconscious adoption of like particular social constraints here with like the demure lady, cross-legged lady-like pose and the requisite full skirt of the 1950s, you know. This meant increasing availability of consumer goods and services, features of the boom that we associate with post-war America. Only unlike America, these contrasts were more dramatic. Christine Mayring, writing on the art of the period, describes a context where in which literally, you know, quote, piles of products had replaced piles of rubble within less than a decade. Of course, this new capitalist optimism came not without its caveats. Theodore Adorno, in a critique of Germany's perceptions of itself after the war, doubted, quote, whether the so-called economic miracle, which everyone participates in, even as they also speak somewhat disparagingly of it, really extends in a social psychological sense as far as one might think of during times of relative stability. So there's like this underlying uneasy consciousness at work. He described, quote, "a discomfort with prosperity," explaining that our prosperity is the product of circumstances. No one trusts in its unlimited duration. Even in the midst of prosperity, people see themselves ultimately as the objects, not the subjects of society. So that is, these new societal structures masked unhappy realities. Citizens of the new Germany were often dissatisfied with the oppressive roles and identities they were expected to adopt so soon after National Socialism's horrors, or alternatively, some of them still longed for it, as evinced by the number of former Nazis occupying positions of power after the war. This dissatisfaction is evident in Wex's own description of the time in the back part of the book, where she describes her experiences of growing up with a distant patriarchal Nazi father and a depressive mother. It was to be a dormant and materialist decade, what Sarah James describes as, quote, "a time of conservative rehabilitation, disinterest in politics, and a rejection of ideologies, particularly a rejection of the ideologies associated with National Socialism, Stalinism, and East Germany. Germans, eager to assimilate into the new consumer landscape, lapsed into apolitical positions without a sense of common political tradition. But this changed in the late 60s and early 70s with increased activity among the student and activist movements on the left and a burgeoning feminist movement. In describing her work, Weck states she was not aware of the movement until the 1970s, but that it would play a decisive part of her formation. Conventional accounts of German feminism state that American and other Western European movements influenced it, but Germany had its own homespun activists, most notably, for instance, Helga Sanders, whose film The All-Around Reduced Personality of 1978 was screened here at YU just last month, and who made the now famous speech at the delegate conference of the League of German Socialist Students in Frankfurt in 1968, speaking on behalf of a Berlin-based group called the Action Committee for the Liberation of Women. She described what would be the concerns of the German second wave feminists, that people live not only under capitalism but in a patriarchy, that they had to perceive oppression in their private lives, not as, quote, not as private, but as politically and economically conditioned, unquote. So much of the energy of the German feminist movement was placed on, rather like in the States, forming alternative organizations. Women started consciousness-raising groups and promoted health and body awareness, grew natural foods and opened women's health centers. They also agitated against discriminatory legislation. So for instance, in 1971, Alice Schwarzer, another feminist and the founder of the feminist magazine Emma, the title is a wordplay on emancipation, launched a successful collaborative campaign through the magazine Star in support of pro-abortion legislation. Feminists were also involved in cultural production and aesthetics, so by 1971, most of the international feminist literature was in the process of being translated into German. French feminists like Hélène Cissou, Lucia Irigaray, and Julia Kristeva were represented, but also American writers like Barbara Ehrenreich and Kate Millett, the former who's tracked on alternative medicinal healers, witches, midwives, and nurses, found audience among women seeking to create a new feminist history of work and struggle, like in healthcare. And the latter, whose 1970 book, Sexual Politics, was a touchstone for considering sex as a category with political implications, and also the book which first introduced Wex to the movement itself. German writers, too, took up the task. So, for instance, Verena Stefan wrote a best-selling novel, Shedding Skins, to which Wex makes specific reference in Let's Take Back Our Space. It's a novel structured around the consciousness of a young woman fleeing the urban battle of the sexes for the company of women in the country, you know, shedding successive layers of her cultured femininity until she reaches, acculturated femininity until she reaches her true womanhood. In some sense, Wex's book progresses in a similar exercise, as a similar exercise in deacculturation. In the realm of visual practice, local and foreign production centered primarily on film, and public programs brought international feminist artists to Germany to produce work, like, for instance, Yvonne Rainer was in Berlin on a DAAD fellowship between 1976 and 77, and like Helga Sanders created the journal Women in Film, and a large culture sprang up of objective works aimed at investigating women's lives and liberation. So even though Wex, by her own admission in the autobiographical section, states that she was only partially aware of the international feminist movement, she was nonetheless engaging with many of its tenets through her own investigations and partaking in similar deconstructive explorations of implicit and essentialist structures of self-creation, you know, using her own experience as the catalyst for making work. And it was really more specifically in the way she deploys photography as a tool or like as a conduit for explorations, and that's the subject I'll turn now to. So as a project concerned less with photography as an art than with its objective abilities to capture and classify, Let's Take Back Our Space evokes approaches to photography already present in Germany from the 1950s onwards, namely documentary structures and seriality. As Stefan Gronert describes, because National Socialism had decimated cultural production during the war, Germany never developed the same modernist fine art photographic tradition as did the United States. Rather, in the post-war era, photography developed along other avenues. For instance, it was in some cases deployed to affirm imperialist and essentialist belief systems, like the universal oneness of man, to counter, you know, this divisive view of man taken by National Socialism, as in Edward Steichen's photography exhibit, The Family of Man, which traveled to West Berlin and Munich in 1955. And then in the early 1970s, with the exhibition Documenta 5 in 1972, which showcased works by Bernard and Hilla Becher, William Wegman, and Ed Ruscha, among others, photography started to enter into fine art practices as a documenting tool. But still, it was only in 1976 that Bernard Becher became the first first professor of fine art photography in West Germany when he was hired by the Dusseldorf Academy, so that his fine art photography made few inroads into German cultural production as a popular mode. And these inroads would be made like much later. So in using photography as a teaching tool in order to underline how implicit sexist assumptions permeated social life, Let's Take Back Our Space also presents a similar pedagogical tendency to other photographic projects abroad, especially in Britain, and in particular those of the photographers and writers associated with the journal Screen Education, a journal for which Wex produced an artist essay in the summer of 1981. I'm thinking of Joe Spence, a British photographer and activist whose works, like Wex's, also challenged essentialist claims and who later shifted her practice to focus on the politics of health and therapy in the final years of her life before her death from cancer in 1992. Spence's practice was more explicitly Marxist than Wex, and Spence was also more explicit about how photography's emancipatory potential resided in its users' capabilities to deploy it in a collective and educational way. Similar to Wex's accumulative project, Spence sifted thousands of photographs of women from magazines, newspapers, greeting cards, film posters, and she organized these all onto 35mm color slides between 1972 and 78. These images could then be compared to one another for the messages they conveyed about gender, and Spence explicitly advocated that collections like this be made to help instruct young children how to become aware of the gender roles and stereotypes that they might be unconsciously adopting. I wish I had a teacher like her when I was in kindergarten. So that certain left-leaning artists were preoccupied with these empirical means leads me to propose that we consider the way Wex's work dovetails with concurrent work in the social sciences, in particular with research in a new field of inquiry at the time called visual sociology, roughly describes sociological fieldwork done in and in relation to still photographs, film, video, and electronically transmitted images, in some cases in relation to pop culture. The most relevant example of this in relation to the issues at stake in Let's Take Back Our Space would be the book Gender Advertisements by Irving Goffman, an American sociologist who in the late 1950s determined that individuals monitor and perform specific identity roles in a dramaturgical way, and that the self was the outcome of a complex give and take, sometimes unconscious, between an individual and their surroundings. A common observation seems to consider his work as anticipating Judith Butler's more celebrated formulations of gender as a construction in the 1990s. Indeed, both share a common influence in that both were informed, for instance, by Simone de Beauvoir's The Second Sex. In 1976, Goffman, who was a sociologist, very concerned with the visual, incidentally, he worked for the National Film Board of Canada in the 40s, and interesting perhaps for like the context of YU, he apparently produced like an unpublished study of New Yorker cartoons. He published in 1976 Gender Advertisements as the entirety of an issue of the American Journal Studies in the Anthropology of Visual Communication, and then later republished it as a monograph in the spring of 1979, also incidentally the same year Wex published the English edition of her book. Like Wex in Let's Take Back Our Space, Goffman subjected a mix of rephotographed news and advertising images, and in a handful of cases, private pictures, to a semiotic analysis of formal relationships in order to argue that formal, unstated, or unacknowledged forms of gesture constituted displays or symptoms of cultural conditioning. So in the slide on, you see two pages from the book. In the one on the left, Goffman's describing how advertisements often portray women touching or holding themselves or objects delicately to emphasize feminine fragility and sensitivity in direct comparison to like utilitarian, masculine grasping and manipulating hands. Wex comes to the exact same conclusions in her own spread of advertisements showing hand gestures, which you can see here and then also upstairs in the exhibition. So in comparison to Let's Take Back Our Space, gender advertisements contains many fewer numbered and annotated images, about 500, arrayed in a vertical layout. Both books find that women seem to rehearse subordinating poses and are often represented as subordinate to men. In his scientific formulation, Goffman also arrives at an interesting and fundamentally anti-essentialist conclusion about the timeliness or appropriateness for donning a particular identity position at any given moment, stating, quote, "One might just as well say there is no gender identity. There is only a schedule for the portrayal of gender. There is only evidence of the practice between the sexes of choreographing behaviorally a portrait of relationship," unquote. So both projects, you know, one coming from the side of the sciences, the other from the arts, meet in a kind of like coffee table book gray zone, somewhere between science and art. Both projects, which kind of emerge from their authors' intuitive observations about society, even when they're trying to deploy the most rigorous or scientific means possible, given their respective circumstances. In Goffman's case, like he acquired and discussed his images with his graduate students in seminars, and was thereby reliant on institutional support. And in Wex's case, it's this kind of vague unease which had led to the project in the first place, that unease set off chiefly by her experiences as a painter, and it is to her painting practice now, which I'll finally return. So to encounter Wex's work in the panel form is obviously a different experience than encountering it in the book form. The panels lend themselves to a more spatial, non-chronological reading of the work, whereas the book encourages a more sequential reading experience. Additionally, the book contains information that's absent from the panels, including Wex's extended essays about her observations and personal experiences. Most interesting for me was the book's final section, where Wex includes 10 pages showcasing 6 years of her own work, a mini portfolio of her paintings, and some of her source material from between 1965 and 72. These images never appear in any of the panels. This self-historicizing section is unique to the work, to the book, sorry. The works are represented in the same horizontal row as the rest of the formatting of the book. And they take up 18 photographs, and with a few exceptions, all are oil on canvas paintings scaled to the human body. Like the book's other images, they are reproduced in black and white, and they are also closely cropped. So that is, the easel is often present in the photographs as a referent for scale, but little else is visible except occasionally a view of what might be like a backyard when she's photographed them outside. These editorial decisions, I think, are really striking in the sense that she treats her paintings like the unwitting Hamburg citizens whose pictures she covertly snapped on the street or the rephotographed advertisements. The paintings shift between like three genres. The first four works from the mid to late 60s, which I don't have here, are abstract portraits of people she knew painted in a kind of neo-expressionist style. The next eight images from the early 1970s, what she calls montages, refer to signage and consumer packaging. Painted by hand without the use of any measuring or ruling implements, these bold typographic compositions refer to products like homeopathic remedies such as medicinal echinacea. They bear the influence of the American pop style that was introduced to Germany around the early 1960s. And as an aside, some also say that pop translated differently to a German context. It was thought that pop presented an implicit critique of consumer culture rather than the embrace that like we associate with Andy Warhol. In Wex's case, she dramatizes and abstracts the language of the pharmaceutical industry into a kind of dreamlike poetry. You can see these are translations of the terms in the painting. So there's this return again to this kind of these feminist preoccupations with health and wellness. these paintings remind me of the typographic serigraphs, which I had just before, of someone like Sister Corita Kent in Los Angeles, obviously made like completely by completely different processes and completely different social context. So this was more of like an iconographic similarity that I saw. But most fascinating are the last six paintings in the series, which mark the point where Wex decided that painting might not be the best way to address the issues of patriarchal structures that interested her. In these works, she starts to depict partial male and female bodies bracketed by the typographic elements from the earlier works. The figures are all presented frontally and rendered in smooth gradations that formally recall the works of Conrad Klapeck, a West German painter who from the 1950s to the 70s depicted images of consumer and industrial items, crossing stylistic boundaries between surrealism and pop. In his work, consumer goods take on a figurative quality, and like many works by pop and surrealist artists, the female becomes an eroticized abstract arrangement of partial forms. But unlike Klapeck, Wex forgoes mechanical realms. Her pop art is like a study in human gestures and language. So in number 16, two works face one another on two separate easels. One painting appears to depict two hands in the act of touching one another. The second painting presents a closely cropped image of a child's mouth with a pacifier in it. Both paintings project almost 3 feet off of their respective easels, recalling, for instance, like the work of Marisol, the Venezuelan sculptor, who also constructed like boxy figurative forms referencing the human body in pop iconography. And they seem to try to claim attention for ideas of touch and gesture and themes like childcare and dependency. In their stylized three-dimensionality and presentation of the body in fragments, both paintings literally take back space by calling attention to the space of easel painting. And I also like, this is another Klapeck, Marisol. I like this painting, which appears to be like an abstracted page of justified texts bracketing an image of a figure in a suit and tie. Again, a study in constraining forms, gendered attire, the typographic grid, and academic language itself. So looking at these 10 pages at the end of Let's Take Back Our Space, I've always found it really, like, just profoundly perplexing, you know, that she includes her own paintings in this way, and she does so as a kind of afterthought. I mean, why perplexing? Artists often self-historicize to varying ends. You know, think of Duchamp's Boîte en Velie, where he showcased all of his works in a monographic edition format. Perhaps it's because one doesn't often see a painter turning a clinical eye to their paintings, subjecting them to a kind of physiognomic photographic teleology, you know, that they exist to service an ultimate goal or end, which in Wex's case was ultimately a move away from painting altogether. So, I mean, in doing what I've just done, performing readings of Wex's paintings, which she maybe wouldn't sanction or encourage, as they occupy such a marginal position in the project, and I've been told that they all ended up in the garbage can, so they really constitute a discarded form. I'm sort of thinking about how to frame this work, if someone should frame this work, like where it fits into these feminist historiographies we've seen in a lot in recent years, you know, the contemporary tendency to recuperate artists like Wex, which often leads to like exhibitions like the WAC exhibition of 2007 or the woefully titled show Seductive Subversion, Women Pop Artists 1958-68 at the Brooklyn Museum in 2011, a worthy subject, no doubt, you know, female artists who work through, you know, traditionally sexist genres of, like pop, and reductive tendencies based on, nominalist reductive tendencies on based on gender. In some ways, looking at these works and knowing a little about her interests and intentions, I kind of lament these paintings as lost proposals, abandoned too soon, perhaps, because there was not yet this vocabulary or, you know, the luxury of hindsight we have now, which is one that takes into account, for instance, histories of feminist painting. And her paintings invite questions that, to my mind, do not seem exhausted, such as, you know, in what ways is it productive, for instance, to think in terms of formal analogies between the space of the page and the space of the canvas? And perhaps more pointedly, how can a practice like painting exist, for instance, alongside and, in fact, inform the social sciences in what would be a movement between like didacticism and indeterminacy, experimentation carried out through different representative avenues. In Wex's case, something had to give. Obviously, that something was painting, but who is to say one form is more successful than the other? I don't know, but I'll leave it at that. Thanks. Yeah.
And Goffman's kind of, he's, very constricted, right? Like, the role of the sociologist is always to try to, like, limit your own participation within your own, or limit your participation in your own research.
Right.
I'm wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I also have had, like, I've had, let's say, hung out more with Wex's book than with his book,
mm-hmm.
but, I think this is the problem of any... of the social sciences, but maybe even more so with visual sociology, because obviously, once you start dealing with images, indeterminacy is rampant, and and I think Goffman was aware of that. I think it's really interesting how the two works, how the two books meet in this space, that they both are based upon really just intuitive readings of images, and that they obviously Wex, the difference probably between the books is that, obviously Wex introduces more of herself, but there is more of this autobiography built into it, whereas, in the social sciences, you would try to, subsume it underneath the institutional rhetoric, but I think Goffman was cognizant of how reading images is always going to be an indeterminate process, and it's really hard. How do you determine a control group for reading images? It's not the same as conducting like a statistical analysis or something. Yeah, does that answer it?
Yeah. I think I've always wanted Goffman to put the autobiographical photos in that book.
There are some private pictures.
Yeah.
That was something I was surprised about looking at Goffman, looking and reading about Goffman's book, is that it's not only advertising, it's not only advertising images. There are private family photos in there. It's a mix, like Wex's book. I was expecting his to be more, constrained to the realm, the public sphere, but they're actually quite close to one another. He just is less exhaustive in his research.
Could you clarify, at the start of your lecture, you mentioned something about the moment when she came to a self-realization about her own suppression of the conditioning of the patriarchal society. Was that an impetus to this work, or was it self-reflected in looking at the work and realizing the work itself had been influenced by?
Yeah, I think it was through the processes of painting, through her awareness that she was accepting, implicitly accepting or not aware of the canonical forms or movements that she was making in making these paintings, and it was a slow awareness, probably happening simultaneously with her, research. She started to get more involved in. Reading about feminism, she discovered feminism in the early 70s, I guess. So it was probably right around this time. So all this information was informing her, and she started to get really self-reflective about her own painting practice. I often wondered if it even came down to how she felt constrained in the act of painting. She was like, oh, I'm holding myself in this, I'm being constrained by the patriarchy as I have my paintbrush in my hand or something.
I
wonder.
One way to do it is the way I've been told.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look at this work outside, and it seems like it's a process of, in itself, a process of self-reflection.
Yeah.
And she's exploring herself, but it's a self-analysis, in a sense, through her own work.
Yeah. Somebody called it an, like another writer writing about it also referred to it as a kind of exorcism, an exorcism of her own.
Yes, it's a very public act of one's
yeah.
inner self.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember her saying when she was here about starting to imitate the people in the photographs. After a while, you know, she developed them, and then she looked at them for a while, and she said, "Oh, I wonder if I sort of stand to, you know, like this." And like she went through and mimicked her own subjects, which was like, well, the way she framed it was that it was a revelation for her.
Yeah. Yeah, another, I like also Marina Vishmet, my friend Marina, who also described as this, like, you know, coming to this sense of unhappy self-consciousness, you know, to realize, like, oh no, like, I'm doing this too. And you look at all the body gestures on display, and you see yourself in, like, in those gestures. And you wonder, you know, I mean, located as that work is in a like, let's say, particular historical moment, it's still, you know, these frameworks still carry forward, and you feel the influence even.
So you mentioned about how when pop art or different like strategies for making pop art immigrated or came to Germany, the Germans really picked up on the consumer critique.
Yeah.
In it, and obviously there's like a little bit of that in this book, because she's using advertising to talk about the way that that capitalism created. Yeah, but do you think that she's critical in any way of her own methods when she's walking around on the street taking pictures of people? I just have this like sense that as a German, the whole activity of going around and trying to group and classify people is kind of a like touchy activity at the time that she's doing this. But
I don't know. I think, yeah, I mean, yes, definitely. I mean, there's definitely references to, let's say, like a history of you know, human classification. I mean, there's also references to Nazi Germany and to these kinds of delimiting activities.
I mean, the thing I hear a lot is that a lot of Germans at the time were upset that they saw a lot of the same kind of mechanisms at work in burgeoning consumer culture as they saw in National Socialism.
Yeah. No, so you're asking if she was... you're asking if there's a critique of that. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, definitely. And she's unrelenting in her critique too. She turns it on the left, not only on the right. Like, and her methods are not like, you know, her methods aren't completely rigorous, and she's self-conscious of that. There's some texts where she talks about the limitations she had to deal with, that she couldn't, like, for instance, she couldn't do studies of like working class people for whatever reason, I can't remember. And then, but she also is like, she's critical of people on the left, like politicians on the left, or like the way that like left politics replicated these sort of gendered hierarchies within them. So, I think it's just like this awakening conscience, like across all fronts. And I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, it wasn't really a question.
Yeah.
I think she totally recognizes how fallible her activities are. That's
mm-hmm.
why
yeah.
in the show you keep seeing her change her strategies of photography and even design, like reaching out and making people take certain poses and then adding that. Reaching out for more and more materials until she gets antiquity.
There's something interesting I noticed also, which I didn't really mention, but like in the work, the picture she's drawing on, often like the pictures of, do you notice this? How like a lot of the pictures of men, they'll be like politicians, like people, men in power, you know, but then like there's hardly ever any pictures of women like that. Like they're all either advertisements or, you know, models or just the pictures of women on the street. So you get this interesting problem of like, is that the control group? Like she just didn't bother to look at pictures of women in power, or is it just the case that there just weren't any pictures of women in power because there were no women in power? Like these are all these interesting problems in the, you know, in let's say her control group or whatever.
It's interesting in context of that, some of the pictures I saw were of men taking positions of power over another man.
Yeah.
Instead of what I assumed was going to be all men, women, women, men. So I love the way she was exploring where traditional roles get broken, but that certain postures are consistent, especially
yeah.
with power relationship.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea of like what her points of departure for the actual design of the book were? Because obviously there's a language that's speaking as well.
Yeah, you know, that would be something to ask her. So really, I am gonna interview her. That's my like ultimate goal, is to finally interview her about this because I didn't get a chance to, but. There is, the work is so, like, obviously the book has such a determined format,
yeah.
and the panels came first, so you can see the desire to, okay, the panels are in landscape format, let's have a book that's in landscape too, to, like, stay true to this, you know, this kind of survey, this latitudinal
taxonomic.
And I know that she did lay it out, she did have someone do the type.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you meet her, she's very controlling.
Yeah.
As anyone here can attest to, she'll let you make no decision for her, which, you know, that's great.
Something I want to know about, I want to ask some German sometime about, like, what is it with Germans and justified texts? Like, Germans, they justify all their texts, it drives me crazy. Like, I worked with my collaborator, and she, like, would send me all of the texts, and they were all justified. And so I was looking at Wex's, and I was like, oh, okay, it's like a cultural thing, maybe. I don't know, something about filling a space, and, yeah.
Anybody else?
Did this lead to other work of a similar investigation? I mean, what has she done since this work?
The paintings went into the garbage can, and the the panels went on tour. They went weird, Sao Paulo. They went around the world. They went to like different countries. And then there's actually a really nice text someone else, Mike Sperlinger, wrote about her, how she kind of basically retreated from the art world and she went into like faith, like medicinal healing. She became a healer. So she kind of stopped the project altogether, but she still is really like obviously enthusiastic to talk about it and display it. So yeah, it was a kind of, Mike's text is about how she kind of retreated. It was like this kind of disappearing practices. And he compares her to like another photographer who also did something similar.
There's a moment in the, we made a bibliography for the show, and there's a moment that Hope and I quoted, what's the book that we quoted her in? Is that the NGBK catalog? The one where she says, basically she stopped making art for, go ahead. Right. She said basically I stopped making art for two reasons. One, I got sick, and two, you couldn't make art about a patriarchal culture, that critique patriarchal culture outside of a patriarchal culture, right? Like, ultimately, I'm still a component in the thing that I want to critique. And that was a real kind of, like cement ceiling for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you can really hear it in the way she talks about how she wants to, like, I mean, it all goes back to me to this, like, Stefan book of, like, shedding skins, you know, like, leaving the, like, this kind of retreat into oneself and into, like, a community of women. I mean, I don't know if that's really what she did, but, like, you know, know, trying to leave behind in a very, you know, material way. Yeah. I'm sorry I missed her. I would have liked to have met her.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.